You are listening to Prometheus by a Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 70. This minute opens with Chance approaching an engineer body saying, "What is this?" and ends with Holloway having collapsed and asking Ellie, "You know infections, what do you see?" And joining me once again is Niall from Bad Minute 89.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Connor.
Yeah, we've been chatting a lot.
I was actually just thinking, because we'll have to get you on for Bat Minute Forever.
Hell yeah.
But have you seen the H.R. Giger design for the Batmobile he did?
Oh my god, I was just thinking about it the other day, because they had a museum, sort of pop-up museum at Comic-Con recently, and the Batmobile was on display there, and I was just thinking, yeah, Giger would have been a bad idea. It's just not the right aesthetic.
Oh yeah, when you see that design, it's just like, it's cool, I guess, but what the hell? Why would Batman drive that? But
clearly did not understand what Batman's about.
Yeah, but we'll have to get you on for a Batmobile minute, and we can break that down and go into some geeker stuff.
It knows exactly what it wants to be. It's such a fun movie night movie. It's just it's got a good energy.
Yeah, yeah. But save it for when you're on the show.
Okay. So, Charlie Holloway, you know, character in the movie Prometheus that we are currently talking about and not Batman. Charlie is beginning to look visibly ill, but he keeps insisting he's okay. And honestly, I have no idea why he keeps saying it over and over again.
Could be to convince himself, to calm himself down, because like, he knows pretty screwed, so he's just like, no, it's fine, everything's fine, don't worry about it, like, it's fine, everything's great.
It almost becomes comedic, and I looked into it, and in the Furious Gods documentary, LMG, who still hasn't answered our question about the tattoo, in case you're not aware, he has a sort of weird crucifix-looking tattoo on his shoulder, which is visible in a previous scene, and Clara and I thought, just must be for the character. What does it say about the character? We're really delving into it like that. No, it turns out it was his, and now we're trying to figure out what does it represent, and why did they not cover it up?
Mm.
So, that's an ongoing mystery.
It could be one of those things like, it's like, because there's a lot of religious imagery going on in the movie already, so Ridley Scott was just thinking like, yeah, that'll add another layer if I just leave that uncovered, and then later on they're like, yeah, but what's the layer? And he's like, I don't know. Just like there's already religious stuff in there. There's already Christian imagery. So just adding more in.
I'm gonna get bloody Ridley Scott on this show. He's got to do some minutes. It's just it has to happen. I don't know how, but I'm gonna make it happen. He's gonna answer these questions for me.
Anything seems possible now. Just the other day, the Mad Max Minute people, it turned out that George Miller has listened to their show.
What?
He name-checked them in an interview, like an interview in IndieWire. He just like, oh yeah, like the Mad Max Minute, the movie, the podcast, breaking it down a minute at a time. And it was just like, what? The director listened to the freaking show. So you never know, Ridley Scott could be like, oh yeah, I can't imagine what they're feeling. Like I would have been like, I just wouldn't know what you would just be like, this is like the greatest thing that could possibly happen for the show.
You just run around the house like an idiot screaming.
But I can imagine, like, because Ridley Scott's probably like, Alien Minute would be like, I've heard so much about Alien. But if someone's doing Prometheus Minute, he may be like, maybe this show gets what I was going for. This show will be more appreciative. So maybe Ridley Scott could be listening. You never know.
Yeah, he's doing his gardening, listening to Prometheus by Minute. Oh, it'd be beautiful. Can't imagine he's, like,
taking
in the
notes
gym.
About, like, just writing down elephant twist for next movie.
Yes. But so LMG in the Furious Gods documentary, he said,
I didn't want to play him sick, you know, with the standard symptoms of being infected with some, you know, life form. I wanted it to come out in a way comically as well. I think we do, when we're sick, we fight against those symptoms of being down and depressed.
So yeah, he basically went in there thinking, I'm going to just deny this to an absurd degree. And there is a weird kind of comedy to Prometheus. You see it throughout the film, and it, no pun intended, alienates some of the audience. And that's where I think a lot of the haters, they're on this side of, no, Alien should be very serious and there's no humor, and I don't get why it's all goofy now.
Mm. I mean, friggin' Aliens has got flat-out comic relief characters and stuff in it, so that doesn't...
Right.
I think there's a precedent set that, like, no, you can have lighthearted stuff within the movie. It's slightly strange to me, though, to think that, like, you're coming into... You know, Ridley Scott's essentially making a follow-up to Aliens, like, a big, big, big deal, and then you're, like, an actor, like Logan Marshall Green. You know, it's famous, but he ain't that famous. For him to be just like... I'm going to play this scene that could, you know, you think on paper should be serious. I'm going to play it like a wacky comedy. That's a pretty gutsy move on his behalf to be like, how the hell what's on the paper? I'm going to just turn it into wacky sickness time.
It's true. And you also had a bit of that. Well, Ridley seems to have encouraged it in Fassbender as well. Like David's whole attitude of, oops, sorry. Oh, you stupid human. I didn't realize you couldn't figure this out for yourself. You know, that sort of taking the piss constantly. Ridley seems to love that humor amongst the horror.
Do you think he, like, I know that you'll be dealing with it in the next movie, but do you think he knew that whole I'll do the fingering line in Covenant? Was that intentionally funny, or is that... Because that just seems like, if you don't realize what that sounds like, Ridley.
Yeah, it had to be. I actually haven't read the shooting script. I've read an early script where the fingering line, if I recall correctly, isn't in there. But yes, I'll definitely be examining the fingering very closely. Because it would be funny if Fassbender just went, you know what? Let's word this in a way that's even dirtier. And this should be a conversation we should have had in episode 69, because there was no 69ing in episode 69.
But now I like the idea that Michael Fassbender slipped that in, and everyone on set was like, except for Ridley Scott, and it went over his head. And it was only like maybe years that from later he'll be just like, you know, lying on his veranda and like, wait a minute, what the hell?
Or looking at Urban Dictionary. Oh... Oh, God, where was I going? Oh, yeah, so the balance of comedy and horror. So before seeing Alien, I was a big Sam Raimi fan, loved Evil Dead, and so I really agree with that philosophy of humor and horror are strange bedfellows, but they work. It almost puts you in this... It's unease, you're in this heightened state, it's this sort of emotional roller coaster. That works for the Nightmare on Elm Street movies as well, where it's like, oh, Freddy, you're so funny. I kind of like you. Oh, God. Oh, no, 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 stop. Oh, geez.
Yeah. I mean, it's even like the whole situation with Holloway and what, you know, happens to Shaw subsequently, like, really reminds me of, like, one of my all-time favorite movies is the David Cronenberg version of The Fly, where obviously, you know, Jeff Goldblum is infected somewhat, and he ends up impregnating Gina Davis,
yeah.
And she, you know, has a dream about giving birth to a maggot and all this stuff. But that does have that's a very tragic movie in terms of like what ends up happening. But there are weird comic beats where like she comes in, and he's just crawling up the walls, and he's all deformed and stuff. But he's just like, wait, what's this coming out of my side? I don't know. And then he like wants her to film him eating something, and he's just like sitting very formal, like, well, what does Brundlefly eat? It's just so weird. And
yes.
It's kind of like, this is funny because it's just like, he's just treating it much like Holloway here. He's just kind of treating it like, I'm very clearly falling apart, but I'm okay. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. Well, it makes it more relatable, and it humanizes a moment where, like with chronic fatigue syndrome, sometimes I'm just temporarily paralyzed from the neck down, and my friends don't freak out. They're just like, oh, he's on the floor again. Oh, and we're just making jokes and waiting for the sort of the feeling to come back. It's never, oh no, call an ambulance, I'm dying, you know?
I do, that's the thing, like, one of the most intriguing things, actually, in Prometheus, though. Because I like it as a progression of, if you look at Alien, the first one, as being, like, it's breaking into a lot of male fears about, like, pregnancy and stuff. The fact, like, oh, yeah, you know, the concept of, like, having something inserted into you that gestates and then comes out of you again is a thing that women are like, yeah, so. Whereas men are like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's horrifying. What a horrifying concept. But Prometheus then takes it another way where they have it happens to Shaw, who you find out can't have children.
Yeah, it's this subversion. Both cases, it's it's perverse or it's subverted in some way.
Mm. Do you think Ridley Scott was trying to make any broader statements with that in correlation, or you just think he was just like, yeah, I'm just twisting a thing I've already established into another direction?
Actually, that is in my notes. A lot of this film is subverting what has come before. I don't know if they're really making a bigger statement with it. It's just more like, well, this is what you're familiar with, and now we're going to do something different. I actually feel like there's more symbolism and subtext to be found in the prequels.
Yeah.
I didn't actually think about this until recently, watching this minute really closely. Oh, right. That this is probably, if someone is very familiar with Alien and thinking about Alien, they're going to go, oh, he's going to have a chest burster moment. Oh, it's coming. But it turns out it's a totally different thing.
Kind of weirdly, because I think that's in the Spates draft. He does, a thing comes out of him. I think you get concept art. It's like a kind of tentacled, like that comes out of different points of his body and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, that would have been cool visually, but I guess that is also like, it's just following what you think is going to happen.
Yeah. We never really see his full transformation. And we can assume it's going to be like Fifield's. I think they handle it really well. And it does culminate in the next minute, well, not yet, but I did put it in my notes that ultimately this scene, well, this whole plot is, you know, where Dallas and Lambert are taking Kane back to the Nostromo, and Sigourney doesn't want to let them in. So we'll talk about that more. But that is also another scene that will be subverted in this film.
Yeah, that's true. That's the thing, though, with the... It's a thing that they've still not, I guess, completely committed to in this franchise, but they've always skirted around it. Like I was saying last episode, that I've listened to the recent audio drama they've done of William Gibson's Alien 3.
Mm.
And one of the big things in it, like the audio drama is like, it's okay. Like it's what the big selling point is, like they've got like Lance Henriksen back and Michael Bain. And they're like, oh, hey, they're doing the voices again. And it's weird because Lance Henriksen sounds way too old now to be doing Bishop. It's just like,
he does, yeah.
But one of the big plot points in that is like, yes, alien-human hybrids. Like, a thing will transform you into an alien. And then the thing is, as you're listening, you're like, that could be a great visual. It's a shame I can't see it.
Yeah.
Whereas, again, they kind of did it in Resurrection. They did have a hybrid, kind of. And then they almost doing a transformation in Prometheus, but they dial it way back. It's like, it's always a thing where like, we're close to getting your alien human thing.
Yeah, I really want that. Just fucking give it to us already. Yeah, first of all, I think Alien is very much a visual franchise. All these films, if you just read the script, it's like, oh, whatever, pretty straightforward plot. No, but it's in the execution. It's absolutely about the execution. It's almost like, you know, a music video where you go, okay, Thriller. Yeah, reading the lyrics. Yeah, okay. No, you're not getting any of what makes Thriller, Thriller.
Yeah. Although thinking back now, I was like, I guess Alien Resurrection, they're pretty much giving you, they were giving you that, but then just like, they give it a big stupid tongue and stuff. And you're just like, not that. Don't give me that idea, but don't give me that.
Yeah, one of my teachers at WAPA, West Australian Academy of Performing Arts, for those who don't know, he was a props guy, did a few Hollywood movies, and one of them was Resurrection, which I do ask him about frequently.
Oh, nice.
Oh, I need some notes for Prometheus. Can you give me some help? Yeah. And he was... Yeah, I mean, he doesn't outright say it, but it's just sort of, yeah, no one was really all that impressed with the newborn.
Yeah. Oh, I get it. Like, even, I think I was like 10 when that came out, and I was like, what the hell is this thing?
I was expecting, and actually, in the concept art, it was something more like Species, where it was walking that line of this beautiful sexual imagery, but also horrific and rapey, you know? There was... Oh, you could have done so much more. It really could have been something to rival the Xenomorph.
I do have to ask, though. So if he's worked on Alien Resurrection, I had to talk about it quite recently when we did that Catwoman hiatus episode. One of the visual effects guys in that, Pitoff, was the guy who directed Catwoman.
Mm.
So I was like, you know a guy who knows a guy who directed Catwoman?
I do. Yes. I might be able to ask about that.
Oh.
The hybrid thing, I think, is really fascinating because it already ties into the life cycle of the xenomorph, where it takes on the genetic traits of the host. So we actually don't know what a default xenomorph looks like, if such a thing exists, because the original one, called the Big Chap, actually has traits of Cain, so just physical attributes, the plantigrade feet, if you will. It's just a bit more humanoid. So that guy in Empire magazine going, I don't get it, that's it. I would really love to see a hybrid, or so human transforming, so they have all the feelings and memories and the personality of a human, but that's happening to them. It's the same thing as The Fly, or occasionally you'll get zombie stories where the zombie is still sentient, and that's really upsetting.
I think this might be, like, in terms of what things that happen in movies, I think it's one of the things that really always gets to me, like, because the Fly, like, really freaked me out. Like, I love that movie, but it was one of the few horror, because I'm usually pretty okay with horror movies, but, like, that was one of the few ones that got to me, like, on an existential level of, like, what if that was happening to you? What would you do? Like, you would be...
Absolutely.
And I remember, like, years ago, there was a storyline in the Spider-Man animated series where Peter Parker literally turns into a giant spider creature.
Oh,
scared
yeah.
the crap out of me. There's an episode of the Superman animated series where, like, Lois, the entirety of the Daily Planet got turned into weird kind of insectoid bat creatures for some reason. I can't remember exactly why, but I remember being traumatized watching it.
Oh, there's one episode of Justice League Unlimited, I think, where everyone's turned into apes, and even that creeped me out. I'm just like, oh no, it's this body horror, it's impermanent. It's like all the characters are like, oh yeah, we'll just turn this ray off and we'll turn back to normal. But oh no, it's yeah, that's like the idea that, oh, Annihilation does that as well, where your body, you aren't really you. You are not your body. Your body is just a collection of cells that can be influenced by external things.
It's something about, like, yeah, the uncontrollable transformation, which is just like, yeah, that really, really freaks me out, because it's just like, it's not something that's been inflicted upon you. It's something that's happening inside you, and you can't, like, how do you stop it? Like, once the thing changed, how can you change it back? You can't, really. Like, that's the, I know lighter, harder affairs, like, oh yeah, you could totally change it back, but, like, if you're looking at, like, Brundlefly and you're seeing him rotting away, it's like, no, you don't come back from that. It's like you're watching yourself slowly disintegrate. And yeah, the same thing of, like, a, you know, LMG might be playing it for a comedic kind of vibe. Mm. But the concept of what's happening in the hallway, it would be like, I would not be keeping it anywhere near as kind of well together as he is.
But you just made me realize, yeah, so as I've mentioned before, chronic fatigue syndrome, or myalgic encephalomyelitis, it's this mysterious illness. It's caused by all these different things. They don't know what it is. They don't know how it works. There's no treatment. There's not even a test to prove you have it. So sometimes people are told, it's just in your head. There's nothing wrong with you. And there is that element of, I'm getting sicker and sicker. I can't do these basic things. My body it feels like it's shutting down. There is absolutely that biological horror. Thankfully, I've improved my situation, because I've been doing a shit ton of research on, oh, like, the immune system, diet, nutrition, all that sort of stuff. So if I just eat meat, I'm fine. All my immune issues go away. But there have definitely been times where you just go, am I dying? I can't stop this. Holy shit. Yeah.
That's scary. It's a scary. I don't envy you your position. I can tell you that anyway.
It's some heavy stuff, man. But in a weird way, that's what draws me towards these kind of horror stories, where there is almost this, I can almost relate. There's almost, you know what it is? It's that fantasy lets you have that catharsis. So when I watch something like Prometheus, you'd think, oh well, why would you want to watch something about horrible incurable infections that ruin your life? For some reason, seeing it exaggerated in this horrific way is almost cathartic.
I do wonder if it's a thing that Logan himself is drawn to, because you think of this, and then he recently did that movie Upgrade, which is also where he gets sort of something put in his body that's going to take over and modify him to something completely
different. That movie
different.
Is so freaking good.
Oh, it's a great movie. That was a great ending, too. I remember being like, yeah, this is good fun, but it's a bit silly and stuff. And then when it actually gets to the end, you're like, oh, that was a good twist.
But we've got some great AI movies coming out lately.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder, you know, it could be that he's just like, hey, I'm a job and actor, I'll take whatever script comes along. Or whether he does have an attraction, I'm like, oh, yeah, I like that. Thematically, that it's a thing that interests him, like the idea of being like, yeah, something inserted into you that's, you know, modifying you and altering your entire being and stuff. If it's source material that he's drawn to in particular.
It is a really fascinating concept. And, well, recently I discovered that, I don't even know how to explain this. So I was autistic for 15 years, but I wasn't born autistic. So now I'm having to sort of look back at my history. So about the age of 11, I just started, my whole personality shifted. I suddenly had all these sensory issues. We didn't know what was going on with me. And then in the past few months, doing the carnivore diet, so cutting out any sort of allergens or anything whatsoever, I'm neurotypical now.
Oh.
And so it is that weird, surreal thing of going, wait, but then what's my personality? So I don't do this anymore, but I do this now. Who am I?
Yeah. That's fascinating. That's a conundrum right there.
Yeah, because was it my gut microbiome? And they're saying that, you know, there are enough neurons in your stomach to basically, or there are the same amount as there are in the brain of a house cat.
Oh.
So that's a lot. So there's a lot of communication going on between the gut and the brain. And so for 15 years, they weren't able to communicate with each other properly. So then I go, am I just a biological machine? I mean, I think I have a distinct personality. It is freaky. And again, Prometheus, Annihilation, even The Thing, or Invasion of the Body Snatchers, all that sort of stuff. It taps into this real primal fear of who am I, and am I a permanent thing, or is consciousness just a shifting phenomenon?
Yeah, it's really, really interesting, because at the end of the day, people are just machines as well. Like, it is all, like, you know, one thing breaks down that could take out everything else as well. So, yeah.
And people have had depression caused by external things. So it could be diet, it could be medication, whatever. Even things like mold in older houses. People were having like really depressive episodes from mold.
Mm.
And then they move out of that house and they just go, oh, all those things I thought and felt and believed, I don't anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm just, I don't want to hear that.
I had a housemate one time who was obsessed with mold, weirdly enough. And I think it was only because the landlord was just like, oh yeah, you might want to wipe down that wall every once in a while because it gets a bit of mold goes up. But, and then, like, but the thing is, you couldn't complain because it was a nice enough place, but it was very, very cheap. So I was like, yeah, that's what you have to deal with.
Mm.
But this guy became, like, obsessed with that mold. And he would talk about it nonstop as if it was just, like, the bane of his existence. I was like, it's a bit of mold, dude. Calm down.
Well, it's the telltale heart sort of thing of, I can hear it beating. I can hear it.
He's just having all the windows had to be open all the time. He was constantly freaking spraying it and wiping it down and stuff.
Oh, like, I've gotten that way because I've been doing this research like, oh, there's this in moisturizers that can cause Alzheimer's. There's things that, like, if you don't air out your room often enough, yes, you could have all this bacteria and mold start to grow. I was like, oh, God. So, like, I've got to be afraid of everything. I'm going to build a spacesuit and wear it all the time. That's my only choice now.
You just want to be the bubble boy. Like, that's the dream.
I've got to be bubble boy now.
Yeah.
So it's it is a neuroimmune disease. So if I do it, people can't be mean to me. I'll be like, well,
yeah,
I have an actual illness.
No. And we're rounding back to Jake Gyllenhaal again. Like the infamous bubble boy.
Yes. I mean, is it just an excuse so I could wear a really good Prometheus spacesuit? Maybe.
Yeah. You gotta live for you.
Yeah. I was just thinking, if I had a Mr. Freeze suit, then I could be ready for summer.
Every time I think about, I wonder about the comfort though of the Prometheus suits though. It's mostly because of this, the one bit where Shaw has to, after she's had the stomach staple, she has to zip up. It's just
oh yeah.
It's obviously she's in agony doing it, but it's more the fact that, like, so how tight is it that it's like you can't even, like, it just seems like it would be way too restrictive to me. That's like,
I think that one was latex, so yeah, it's really hot and uncomfortable and form fitting.
Yeah.
Whereas the other one looks like a onesie, real comfortable. Give me that.
Back to like Christian Bale in his Batman suit, because it's just like, yeah, he looks uncomfortable. Apparently he was genuinely very uncomfortable in it. I think he said something like in interviews for Batman Begins, where he was like, oh, it was hot and stuffy and I had a headache all the time. It was a nightmare to wear. And then I think it was like when they did The Dark Knight, the crew were wearing t-shirts with that quote on it or something to kind of mock him, I guess.
They were filming in Hong Kong. I was actually there in Hong Kong. I looked up and saw a Batman, I don't know if it was Christian Bale, standing on top of a building. The one that he sort of glides off of and then he attacks that Chinese businessman.
Oh yeah, it goes into the get.
Yeah, that one. So
yeah. Oh, so you saw them shoot that? That's amazing.
Yes, and I was in a t-shirt and shorts and sweating my ass off. It was a really humid day. Maybe there's a bit more of a breeze up there, but yeah, Hong Kong in the summer is just like 100% humidity. I should say dew point. Humidity doesn't determine how humid it feels. It's the dew point, weirdly enough. Oh. God, shut up with your fucking science facts, nerd. Anyway. I don't know how you could really get around it other than maybe if they just put him in a digital Batman suit, because you don't want your actors to be so encumbered that they can't perform. But then also Doug Jones exists and he never complains, so maybe it's just a matter of getting the right person.
Yeah. I was actually, ironically enough, just listening to the other day, they had an episode of Spider-Man Minute where they were bemoaning the fact that modern Tom Holland Spider-Man, because the eyes and stuff, and particularly when in the Avengers Infinity War and Endgame, when he's wearing like the iron spider suit, they're just like, that's not an outfit he's ever worn. And I think even Tom Holland himself has had to say, like, yeah, I've never, it's too fantastical. It's like, it's so fantastical, it could never actually exist. So I've never, whenever you see that Spider-Man in that metal outfit, he's never existed.
Yeah, it's like Vision.
Exactly, yeah.
They do some of the makeup, but they do most of the makeup and stuff, but then they have to do just a final layer to sort of make it look more like an android.
But I think like they were bemoaning the fact that, like, yeah, so there's a you like when you go in to see your superhero wearing his superhero outfit. So if they started doing CGI Batman, they would be like, nah, it's not that hard an outfit to get down, guys. Like, it's just, you don't have to CGI him up.
Unless it's Batman Beyond. Yeah. Batman Beyond is probably the one exception where I go, yeah, if you want to go full CGI on the face at least.
Have you played the Batman Beyond skin in
Oh my god, yes.
Because that's one, like, I can't take my eyes off that ass. Like, every time it's there, it's like,
he thinks.
It's just way too, like, it's like, you'd think the criminals of Gotham would be like, why the hell is Batman running around? He's just like, is he naked? Is he just painted himself black? What's going on here?
Yeah, it's because they just put it on that body type without changing it. Like, Terry was never that built, and it was never that tight. Yeah, it took me a while to realize, like, why am I so distracted by his ass? Oh, he doesn't have a cape. Right, so I guess Rocksteady Batman, obviously, he thick, but you never see it. So. I do love that skin, because just 10-year-old me is, oh, this is Terry. Oh, you got the wings.
That's my thing, though. Arkham Knight, then when they made the 89 skin available, I was like, this is the only skin I'm ever going to play this game in.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I want. I want him to look like Michael Keaton.
He should.
So, generational.
He needs to come back as old Bruce Wayne, please. I want it.
It's one of those. Apparently, there is something in the film. Like, there's Michael Uslan, who's like the producer, been producers of Batman movies for, since 89. And before, he was developing it like from like the early 80s. people have talked to him on Instagram and they've been like, you know, we need to do something with Tim Burton's Gotham. Like, you know, do some Keaton Batman, something like animated movie, comic book, something. And he's just like, yeah, we're working on it.
Mm.
So there's something coming down the line. I can't imagine it'd be economically viable enough for Warner Brothers to get Michael Keaton back in and continue that, you know, from, it's a sequel to Batman Returns. Like, I don't think they're going to be doing that.
I could imagine kind of like a backdoor sequel where, so if they're doing the Robert Pattinson Batman, maybe they could do a Batman Beyond type thing. And then you get a little bit of a kind of a what do you call it? The Frank Miller type old man Batman in flashbacks or whatever. And yeah, something like that would be cool.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be up for it. And definitely, like, I know they did try to do, Kate Leth tried to do an 89 continuation comic that DC turned down. You can get the concept art for it. It's amazing, where it's just like Gina Davis is Poison Ivy and all this kind of stuff. I think maybe that was a couple of years ago, so maybe there's been more renewed interest in Keaton Batman now. So maybe she just asked too early.
The crew finds the ampules are now leaking mutagen. I'm not sure why they began leaking either. You'd think something this powerful and dangerous would, you know, be put in better airtight containers. And I thought the people running Chernobyl were incompetent. Topical. Speaking of bodies falling apart, and no. Chance finds Milburn's body face down. Meanwhile, Charlie has collapsed, and he has succumbed to the... Well, he's succumbing to the infection, I suppose. And this is, again, as I mentioned earlier, I wonder how many people were bracing for a chest burster here, going, oh, is something wrong? And we saw he took the drink, so is this going to be...
Nah,
fooled ya. But in the script, and I'll go into this in a solo minute, because I never read scripts when I have a guest on, because there's plenty of material. I don't need any more. But in the engineer script, Holloway does die because of a chest burster or a sort of an octopus tentacle thing during the previous romantic scene. So, yeah.
It's weird, because I understand it's like he's trying to subvert what you think is going to happen, but then it's kind of leaving you with the, sorry for the crude terminology, but it's kind of like giving you blue balls, where you're just like, oh, you're waiting for it to happen. And then it's just like, no, he gets set on fire. And it's like, like, come on, just give me the...
But my monster, I want the monster.
To be fair, though, they do make, I think actually, like, if people poo-poo Prometheus, I'm just like, yeah, but the thing is, when it does get the stuff like Shaw having to give herself the cesarean and stuff, that's so well done that it's like, well, it did pay off eventually, at least. It left you wanting a little bit with this. But they had something lined up later that was going to be like, oh, wait, no, you're going to get something out of this. Don't worry about it.
Prometheus, the blue ball entry into the Alien franchise, because it's like, oh, and now David and Shaw are going to go on an adventure. Oh, she's dead.
The film I would most compare Prometheus to, and I say this as a big fan of this other movie, but it's very much like Fire Walk With Me, like the Twin Peaks prequel.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's also, like, this is the answer to questions that no one was asking, but it also is just like, yeah, it's kind of an answer, but it's also just making you go like, but wait, what? Like, because the end of Fire Walk With Me, I think now, like, people love that movie now, but apparently at the time, it was just like, it was getting booed at the Cannes Film Festival and stuff, because people were just like...
Well, that's like Evangelion, Neon Genesis Evangelion. I just finished the series. I'm just like, what the fuck? Where? There's no answers.
But yeah, I think that might have been like, you know, it was an intentional thing in Lynch's part of just like, yeah, I never said I was going to answer anything. I was expanding the story out. And it's the same kind of thing with Prometheus. It's just like, well, we're kind of getting little hints of something, but like, I'm just expanding the universe now.
I really like that. I think, I've mentioned this before, that when they released the initial run of the Blu-rays, it was like, oh, and we have a 2-hour documentary. Your questions will be answered. It's like, I don't want fucking answers. I want the mystery. I want the same feeling I got watching the space jockey scene in the first Alien, where I go, okay, you're giving me a little bit of a hint. You're giving me some evidence and I can let my imagination run well, but you're not telling me definitively what this thing is or isn't. And Prometheus is the same.
And I think that David Lynch should take that to new extremes with the, season 3 of Twin Peaks, where for some reason throughout the entire run, everyone was like, this is going to wrap up everything. And then at the end of it, you're just like, of course it didn't wrap up anything. What the hell did you think was going to happen? You're even more confused now than you ever were. There's more open ends. There's more everything. Again, it's the same deal with Covenant. It's just like, at the end of it, you're like, oh, okay, well, I guess, you know, this is wrapping up now. And then they're just like, nope, you know, he's got Daniels and he's gonna infect her with the thing. What's going to happen next?
That is the most brutal ending for a movie where you just go, oh, that's horrible. Oh, no, and now I'm stuck with this for however many years until the next one.
Yeah, yeah. It was even bad, too, because the most fumbling things in it is that it's so, so obvious that it's David and not Walter at the end. And you're just sitting waiting for the penny to drop going, this isn't going to be a twist. I already know that it's him. But then when they make it even more brutal than it needs to be, and you're like, oh my god, what an
such
asshole!
A gut punch. Yeah, he's a dickhead. Oh yeah, I can't wait to get to Covenant. I shouldn't keep saying that because it sounds like I don't want to do Prometheus anymore. I do. I love Prometheus. It's just I've got so many things to say about things in Covenant, and I have to keep holding back. Maybe I should just do both at the same time and make my podcast feed really confusing.
I know that's killing the Godfather minute, guys, because they keep talking about, in Godfather 2, Frank Pantangeli, the character. They absolutely love him. They're constantly talking about him. And they're just like, so episodes where like, should we just skip ahead to Godfather 2 so we can get to him? Like, no, we have to do it minute by minute.
I think there is some advantage to at least holding back and going, okay, I've got this to say about Covenant, but it does tie into Prometheus. So you're sort of talking about it from one perspective, and then when you actually get to Covenant, you can just talk about it in a different perspective.
Yeah. I think that's actually one time when I was on Lord of the Rings Minute, and it was just me and Norman, and we ended up like in the middle of the new Two Towers. We spent the whole time just talking about the Mouth of Sauron. And then he was just like, yeah, but he's so far away. These movies are so long.
Mouth of Sauron's so cool.
It'll be like 2 or 3 years before we get to him again, so people have forgotten about what we said. So I was like, yeah. All right, fine then.
That's the other thing I gotta remind myself is that most people are not gonna smash through your show in a short time frame. So by the time they do get to whatever it is you mentioned in like minute 10, and then again in minute 100, it's fine.
That's the thing. I always have that concern when I'm doing notes for Batman. I'm like, we kind of brought this up before. Are we just repeating ourselves? But then I remember like, yeah, but there's other shows. Do you remember what they said 70 episodes beforehand in intricate detail? No, you only remember the broad strokes. So,
and it's good to have those, to reiterate those points, because I've got these sort of what I call my thesis statements, the way I'm approaching Prometheus and my fundamental reading and beliefs and interpretations. And I keep coming back to those over and over again, like angels, engineers as angels, and my whole sort of John Milton-esque analysis. Like, yeah, it's fine to say that again and again because I'm exploring more of the same concept. So it's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But speaking of subverting something, so we've subverted the expectation of the chestburster. They've gone in a different direction, which, yeah, it's arguable. Is that better? Is it worse? The audience was somewhat disappointed, but I'm pretty happy with how Holloway goes out. The flamethrower death is pretty rad. I love it.
Do you think the because of the feedback Ridley got to this, where he's like he was trying to subvert expectations and people wanted it to be more like the established franchise? Was that then why he made like the backburster in Covenant, where he's like, all right, so I'll do something that's like the chestburster then, but I'll do it a different way. So it literally just comes out the other side of
the person. I was just about to say, so the more notable subversions would be the chestburster scenes in Covenant. And I'm glad that, I know Ridley's heart really isn't in it in terms of bringing back the Xenomorph and retreading the same territory. He's very much into androids and engineers. But he has managed to do something interesting with Chestburster, at least. So you've got the Backburster, and you've got the one that comes out of the mouth, also awful. And then there is my favorite, Orym's death scene, where it's played as this beautiful birth scene. And there's a soft lighting behind it, and David is just looking on in like a proud parent watching this skinny little little xenomorph baby getting out of there, and he puts up his hands, and the xenomorph does too, and it's just, fuck yeah, Ridley, go for it. What are you doing?
I remember there had been, like, weird kind of laughter in the cinema at that point. Yeah. People were just like, what is this? This is so strange. What is this?
That's what I love about Covenant and Prometheus too, where you have to just sort of let go and go along for the ride and just go, this is hilarious, this is crazy, this doesn't make any sense, but goddamn, I'm entertained. So that is actually all my notes for this minute.
Yeah, that's pretty much anything else I could bring up, just so we don't have another hour-long episode.
I know, fucking hell, what are we doing?
But, yeah, I got, like, anything, that, you know, it's all the same characters next episode, so yes. I'm happy to leave those notes until then.
All right, this is Coulson signing off. You can find me on traviandesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook. And where can we find you now?
You can get me on Bat Minutes as a podcast where me and my co-host John Parker go through the Batman movies from 1989 up through and including 1997, 1 minute at a time. We are currently just finished Batman Returns, so we got two whole seasons out there if you want to dig into those. And yeah, we're on iTunes and all your normal podcatchers. So just yeah, we're out there.